Captain's log, stardate 3372.7. The Trekcast remains trapped in the TOS era of Star Trek, and our next assignment is Season 2's Amok Time, an episode filled with horny rage and awesome fight music. I have instructed my crew to behave themselves during the screening and not emulate the insubordinate behavior of Mr. Spock, lest they find themselves in the brig for illogical conduct.
In the not-too-distant future, four movie fans awaken from a nuclear nightmare, only to discover that the world is a barren, movieless wasteland. However, the destiny of our four heroes is not set. A chance discovery in Sector 2, and an unfortunate accident that rips the very soul from one of their own, will lead them down the path of bringing the lost art of cinema back to the wasteland.
Welcome to Apocalypse Video.
Captain's log, stardate 3372.7. First Officer Spock seems to be under stress.
If I want anything from you, I'll ask for it!
If you don't get him to Vulcan within a week, 8 days at the outside, he'll die.
I await you.
Who is she?
My wife.
She chooses the challenge. She will choose thy champion.
This one.
This combat is to the dead.
Hello, and welcome back to the second installment of the Trekcast, TOS edition. I'm your host and Captain Dave. I'm joined again by my fellow... I'm trying to think of a clever way to describe you, but I can't think of anything, so I'll just say Lieutenant Jackie.
Which one of us were you talking to? Yeah, I'm Lieutenant Jackie, in a pig's
eye. Oh no, you're First Officer Jackie. What am I talking about?
Well, and when I kill you, I will take control of the ship. I'm looking forward to it, Dave.
Forgive me, I mixed up your ranks. Lieutenant Mike.
He's as tight-lipped about it as an Aldebaran shell mouth.
I thought about writing that down in my notes, but I'm like, I won't know how to spell that. I'm not even going to bother.
You're going to find it in your notes and be like, what the fuck?
I did add an H because I was afraid I would... I add an H to, like, Alde... Bron, because otherwise I knew I was going to read it and be like, he's an Aldebaran or
something. An Aldebaran.
I'd say it wrong.
Well,
put a little, McCoy steez on it.
I don't know about you guys, but as I was writing notes as I was keeping notes throughout the episode, I was writing character names down, specifically Vulcan character names. And when the credits came up, I'm like, of course I spelled it wrong.
I was shamefully already very familiar with the spellings of T'Pau and T'Pring and Staan. Because Staan has two N's, okay?
Do they have a lot of apostrophes in the name?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Lot of T apostrophe stuff.
Is it T apostrophe Pau? P-O-W?
It's not. It's P-A-U.
I basically wrote them down in my notes phonetically.
T-Pau!
So that I would at least pronounce the name correctly. That's all that matters.
I'm revealing myself already as someone who has read a lot of Star Trek fan fiction.
Fan fiction can enlighten us on a few areas. So we're talking about Season 2, Episode 1, Amok Time, a very famous Trek episode.
A title that means nothing in classic TOS fashion.
Yeah. Jackie, this was your pick, and I gotta say,
solid, solid pick.
It was, as we were discussing a bit before recording, there's a long, long section in various Wikipedias of the reception and legacy of this episode. And a lot of, things that are both like media and like magazines and things that you're like, why would they have a, like, the New York Public Library has cited this episode as this one just tickles me pink as having Spock's second best scene in the show. But like things like that, a lot of, organizations and lists and stuff have this episode as like one of the, like, you shouldn't skip this one because it's really fun one. It's a lot going on. Yep.
I was, you guys are more familiar with the original series Trek than I am. I think I watched through the first two seasons a few years back, ended up not finishing. One hurdle for me for original series Trek, and just sort of in general, is they are longer than Next Gen episodes by about 10 minutes usually. They're about 50 to 55 minutes. And while that might not sound like a lot, oftentimes that 5 to 10 minutes can be brutal. Like if an episode is sagging, you're like, oh god, this is a little boring.
In general, it's a much like slower show than TNG and basically anything else, because it was like, it was the 60s where TV is still pretty new at this point.
TV wasn't a thing. Our attention spans hadn't been dwindled yet.
Yeah.
If you're they're also assuming, like, if you're in the 60s watching this, you're probably drunk or on Valium
or a child.
Stoned, or a small child.
A child sitting like 3 inches from the screen.
On pet pills, on downer pills.
On uppers, downers, you name it.
Well, that's the thing. Having said that, I think this is like one of the breeziest, quickly paced episodes of original series Trek I have seen. I would honestly, I've only seen the first two seasons, but I would put this in top 10 TOS Trek for sure.
I think so, yeah.
I might go top five.
It's also notable for a couple other reasons. It's the first time we see Chekhov and his monkey's hairdo wig.
And you were saying it's the introduction of the Vulcan salute.
It is. It's the first time we see the live long and prosper hand gesture.
Oh, wow.
And the slogan, right?
And the slogan. And the first time we see Planet Vulcan, a lot of kind of stuff about Vulcans.
It's definitely not Mars.
It's not Mars coded at all. These red sands are sparkly. So, but the famous Vulcan salute is something that, as the story goes, Leonard Nimoy came up with. Because this is the first time we see Spock interacting with other Vulcans, and Nimoy or someone was like, well, they should have a kind of, you know, maybe a salute, a signal or something. And the famous, like, fingers apart V shape of the hand is something that he saw in Temple as a child, because it's like a Jewish hand symbol. And it was actually during like a part of Temple where you're supposed to have your eyes closed. And so as a kid, he was like, yeah, I know, I'm gonna look. And he saw this hand signal being done, and it stuck with him, you know, and years later he was like, what about this? So
wow. Yeah. And the first time someone says live long and prosper, he basically says, I will not.
Actually, no, I can't.
Actually, I won't.
Live long, T'Pau, and prosper.
Live long and prosper, Spock.
I shall do neither. I have killed my captain and my friend.
Actually, fuck you. And that fits in so well with Spock, because
I just killed my lover, I mean captain.
Because that's, you know, it works with Spock's whole thing where he's half human, half Vulcan. And to the Vulcans, he's like, oh, we've heard about you. You have a reputation. You're that crazy Vulcan off in Starfleet. Yeah, why would T'Pring want to be married to you?
Well, there's this episode. Yeah, like this, it's a lot of love triangles going on, not just with Spock and T'Pring, his betrothed, but Nurse Chapel.
No, Chapel.
I would argue Kirk gets into the mix.
Kirk is absolutely in the mix. The Nurse Chapel one too is so funny, because I feel like that's a kind of through line in TOS is like she's got a big crush on Spock and he just does not give a fuck about her.
And you mean Christine?
Christine.
And Dave, you know who that is. You know who Nurse Chapel is, right?
Well, that, yes. And we'll get into that. Let's that is one. I have a thing in my
notes.
You're
like, yes, that, I have a whole that section on her.
Majel Barrett, who plays Nurse Chapel, who comes back later in Next Gen as Troy's mother.
Our Lady of Troy. Star Trek.
But she also has a much bigger connection to Star Trek than just beyond starring in it. But we'll get to that in a little bit. Who wants to break down the plot synopsis of A Mock Time?
Shall I?
Yeah, Jackie, sure. This is your baby.
This is my... Okay, so this is the season two opener. They were going so hard for the 1967 episode of Star Trek the original series, A Mock Time. So we start with Spock is acting really weird, and we're trying.
Is that Nurse Chapel bringing him soup?
Why is Nurse Chapel
bring soup to me?
Bringing him soup, and it's
we
like
get the, we get the great shot of just the soup being thrown out of the room with like
at full speed, and then Spock like comes out of his room and he's like yelling. He's like, "Get that shit away!" He doesn't say that, but and then
he's like breaking out with acne.
Yeah, it's a really stressful time. It's like
got a
but
huge
so...
boner that he's rocking.
Bones, I'm a busy man.
Jim, when I suggested to Spock that it was time for his routine checkup, your logical, unemotional first officer turned to me and said, "You will cease to pry into my personal matters, Doctor, or I shall certainly break your neck."
Spock said that?
What is this? If I want anything from you, I'll ask for it. So
Kirk and McCoy are both like, "What the hell's going on, dude? This is not like you." And at that point
he's just like, "You guys wouldn't understand.
You wouldn't understand." He slams his door, except he can't because the doors don't slam.
Mr. Spock, Mr. Spock, we've noticed you've been taking extra shower time. Can you mind you explain yourself?
Mind your own business. Jim.
Shut up, Jim!
You're wasting a lot of the recycled water, mister.
So we find out eventually that Spock is acting so weird because he is he's having a little bit of, it's not quite Vulcan puberty, but it kind of is. It's
they compare it to mating season. Like
it's
salmon's,
mating season.
Salmon's returning to where they spawn.
He needs to go spawn. This is Ponfar, unfortunately. this is
There's the whole thing where he's like, he doesn't want to tell anyone what's wrong, and it keeps getting worse. And he's like, "I need to go to Vulcan," and he won't say why. And then he tells the crew to
Vulcan. He goes behind Kirk's back because it's this whole thing of like he's acting weird. We need to go to Vulcan. Kirk's like, "Okay, great, of course." But then it's like, "Oh, you need to go to this inauguration for like an admiral, blah blah blah." So Kirk's like, "Yeah, okay, I guess we'll go to Vulcan afterwards." And Spock's like, "I don't know if that's a good idea."
And there's that great moment where Kirk is like, he's just like sitting in bed thinking about his lover
good,
Spock,
his good pal,
and he's like,
"Spock,
he's like,
you know what? I'm gonna do him a solid."
He's like, and then he's like, Hey, Scotty or whoever.
Hey,
like,
Chekhov, the crew member who's been here the whole time.
New crew member Chekhov, how about we? How long will it take to go to Vulcan?" He's like, "What are you talking about?
We're already going
Spock
to Vulcan.
Spock already told us that you want us to go to Vulcan." He's like, "God dang it!"
And it's because Spock is in this horny madness of Ponfar that he's undermined his captain.
Spock, when I asked you to come to the front of the class earlier today, you said no. I want to know why. Why couldn't you stand up in front of the class?
You were tugging your uniform shirt down very aggressively. What was that about? So we get this fantastic scene because, again, it's the 60s. You could only say so much on television.
It was surprising what they said, though.
But
I
love the exchange between Kirk and Spock, where Spock's like, "It's a matter of biology." Biology? You mean Vulcan biology? Biology of Vulcan?
Yeah, they're like, "Birds and the bees. You mean reproductive?"
And they're like, "Yeah." So that's what we're talking about.
Yes, Captain.
Spock this whole time
May I have another Starfleet pillow?
He's like shaking, like trying to tightly control himself this whole time. We had a little bit earlier in the episode, too, where Spock is like, He's holding like a needle or like a sharp thing behind his back.
He's ready to get stabbed.
He's white knuckling it. And then Kirk at a point in that exchange sees it behind his back and kind of has this quiet look on his face of like, I'm going to ignore this. Something is clearly wrong.
There's a great moment that in that exchange there's some good dialogue where I think Kirk is like, eventually he's like, hey, man to man, like what's going on? And Spock is like, I'm telling you, man to man, like, I need to go to Vulcan and I need you to accept that answer. And that's it.
I don't like this obligatory thing that if you're in Starfleet, you have to sign up for No Nut November. I'm a Vulcan. That should not apply to
As
me.
A Vulcan, I should be excused.
The incel community, I guess, really infiltrated the Federation.
That's how you get broccoli. This is the legacy. This is the legacy. But all that to say, we finally get this kind of reveal when we're heading towards Vulcan. Kirk has finally, you know, accepted that, like, look, something's clearly wrong. I'll take the shit of us missing this, you know, Starfleet thing because, like, my guy Spock is like something is he is not well.
Well, he has one of my favorite Kirk. This is one of my favorite Kirk lines in Star Trek. I think this got to me. He says,
I know the Altair situation. We would be one of three starships. Very impressive, very diplomatic, but it's simply not that vital.
You can't go off to Vulcan against Starfleet orders. You'll be busted.
And I can't let Spock die, can I, Bones? And he will if we go to Altair. I owe my life a dozen times over. Isn't that worth a career? He's my friend.
I owe him my life a dozen times over. Isn't that worth a career?
Mm. Yeah, and guess what? That's going to be a through line through every single Star Trek movie.
This is some of the magic of Kirk. Like he's been parodied to death, and like you forget, like the actual character of Kirk is not 100% just like a bro.
He's not the
J.J. Abrams guy with his leg up eating the apple 24/7.
The Zap Branniganification of Kirk is funny, but it is also missing what is so, you know, lovable about the character, which is. Yeah, he'll throw it all away for the people he loves.
He's a good leader. You see, like, why people would follow him to the ends of the earth.
Yeah, he will be, you know, court-martialed for stealing the Enterprise, but he's got to go resurrect his best friends. Anyway, that's in the future. But for now, we get on, you know, the view screen in front of the whole bridge, this Vulcan woman to bring who is Spock's wife. What?
Beautiful.
That is
betrothed.
That is my wife, Captain.
And they have this this really good exchange. The Vulcan like always you know touching and to be touched. Like it's a good exchange. It's you know, this beautiful, cold...
We'll drop a clip.
...Vulcan woman. We'll drop a clip. But, so eventually we get to Vulcan, but not before Spock is like, hey, McCoy, hey, Kirk, will you come down with me for my very special puberty experience?
I actually need two friends to watch me.
I need two bros for this. And they
look. I'm into it. Okay, I like it. Just don't ask me any questions.
But I need you,
man
both
to man, Kirk. Just accept it.
Could you please?
I'm a bit of an exhibitionist. I don't know what to tell you.
And they're both. It's actually really sweet because you know McCoy and Spock always have their little back and forth of like McCoy's racism and Spock just messing. But he's like, you know, I want you there too. McCoy's like touched. And so we go down to Vulcan. It's very sandy and red and
good,
you know,
map paintings. I like impressed by how good Vulcan looks
because we're on like a very specific you know outcropping of rocks and Vulcan that you can see in the background. There's like a city, there's, you know,
well, it should be stated we watched the remastered version the episode, so there's a reason why it looks like, oh, that looks actually good.
Okay.
Is that did they like change stuff like that in
you didn't know this? I mean,
well, I know
the
they changed
effects.
The like
I know there was the like some CG stuff, added yeah, and for... stuff, but I didn't know that they did like new, because it didn't look CG, it looked
it
like
was
a
the
painting.
Establishing shots.
Oh, well, it did look good.
But to your point, this is the first, because in the first episode we watched the Khan episode, Space Seed, we were deprived of any scenes of going down to a planet.
That's true. It was basically all on the ship last time.
Yeah, this is our first time seeing like the signature stark one color backgrounds of planet sets.
Oh, I love
and
it.
And I
so
love
much.
This about TOS. Yeah. It's like you get one color, that's all you get.
That's a red planet.
You're on the red planet or the purple planet or whatever.
It's like even less than like Star Wars. Like Star Wars at least has a full biome for the planet. We just get a color in Star Trek.
But it adds to that, like you've mentioned this before, Jackie, it adds to that stage play vibe of TOS. And it's fun to watch.
It's and I really like the this is basically like the beginning of filling in this, you know, aspect of the show of like Vulcan as a planet and a culture and everything. And and that's something that I really was drawn to when I was first getting into like Star Trek as a whole. That's something that I think the 2009 Abrams movie is not terrible at, the kind of glimpses of Vulcan that we see there.
It's pronounced Vulcan.
Vulcan. Great. Did you know it's 1967 and we're still making fun of Russians? But the kind of idea of the Vulcans as like a people are, they're so tightly controlled and, you know, focused on logic and et cetera, because there's this kind of underside of like, you know, brutality and
horniness
and horniness, importantly, horniness
and jealousy.
And well, but the very strong like emotions involved that we see, which is why, you know, in every other part of their lives, they have to be like, I am logical. I do not laugh or joke or lie because that would not be logical. I really like that, especially how we see Spock transform into this terrible creature. But yes, so Ponfar is a condition. What is the description I'm reading here?
Oh yeah, is there like an official like from the Chattopedia? Like
absolutely.
I want like the scientific definition.
Let me
of Ponfar.
See what we have here. All right, mating drive. Every 7 years, Vulcan males.
Every 7 years.
Every
wow.
7 years. It's not that
so
they
in,
can.
In like if TOS had kept going in a few more seasons, we'd be back at
we'd
another.
We'd have to do it again.
This is going to be an episode where you just like, oh, he's throwing the soup again.
God damn it.
Captain, look, I met someone on Risa when I had my last shore leave. One thing led to another.
It, unfortunately.
We're going to have to fight to the death again.
Unfortunately, I wasn't. Fuck. But yes, every 7 years, Vulcan males and females experience an overpowering hormone imbalance known as Ponfar. Once triggered, a Vulcan must have sexual intercourse with someone, or the chemical imbalance may cause insanity, loss of control, and death.
Unless you get into a fighting match, and if you win, you're no longer horny.
Well, it's so weird. It's so weird how if you kill like the most important person in your life, you're like, I'm never going to be horny again. But it's definitely not romantic.
Well, that is the idea. Like, you have to partake in a seriously like emotional release.
Yeah, it's got to be violence or sex or something. Okay. But okay. if you're not letting it out, then like you're just gonna fucking explode. In a bad way.
Yeah, I bet that like the violence and sexuality is linked. You know, I've never
it
killed
always is
a person, but I imagine if I did, I'd
you'd
not
bust
want to have sex.
You'd be busting.
You'd bust.
Also in this section, despite popular opinion, TOS writer and story editor DC Fontana insists that Ponfar is not the only time that Vulcans feel sexual desire or engage in sexual activity.
Oh, I love DC Fontana.
She's great.
Do you know DC Fontana?
She came back and wrote on Next Gen.
She wrote like some of the best Star Trek TOS episodes, and then also came back for TNG and is like, I think as much as anybody responsible for like a lot of the core Star Trek things, but you know, you don't hear her name as much as Gene Roddenberry, but she.
Sure.
Well, that's another thing that's interesting about this episode. I would have to go back and rewatch season one, but I wouldn't be surprised if this is like one of the earlier and one of the few episodes that really delves into like just the character's personal lives and like the culture of a species. It's not like, oh, we're getting attacked by another god creature. We got
there's no monster of the week here or anything.
Yeah.
No, the monster
is of the week
Spock.
Is horniness.
Is horniness. There's also in the third Star Trek movie, search for Spock when he's on, what is it, like the planet Genesis or whatever, and Spock's like quickly aging. But so by the end of the movie, he's regular Spock again. And unfortunately, he does go through Ponfar as like a young person. And then the, what is it, like Syvek? Or is it one of the...
Savick.
Savick.
Well, he plays Patty Cake with Savick.
You gotta play Patty Cake with Savick, otherwise he would have died. But there's a line in this episode, and we'll get to the Ponfar.
I can't get over
the
every 7 years thing. Well, that would be such a hassle.
That's the thing where... there's a line in this episode where Spock says like, oh, I thought I was going to be spared from this because he's half human. But so presumably he is not. Yeah, he's never had a Ponfar before. And he's
in
his
is like every 14 years.
It might be a little delayed because yeah, he's mixed. But yeah, so we get down to the planet Vulcan. And then,
well, you know, it is, you know, the people always talk about how like Star Trek TOS is like in a lot of ways progressive for the time with diversity. I don't think it can be understated the like in 1967 America putting a Russian dude as one of your main characters.
No, it's true.
Probably like a little bit of like, what?
But I'm sure the producers are probably like, can we at least make him young and give him like a monkey's wig?
Oh yeah, he's got to be young and
cute. That was cool back in 67.
That was the fucking look.
We got to make this palatable. Yeah. Put a monkey's wig
make
on.
Make him look like one of those Beatles.
Well, it's like as with, you know, any of the characters on the show, like you know, Sulu or Uhura, it's like, yeah, we're making a stand of all these people of different races and ethnicities working together. Importantly, they are all hot, all of them sexy. We're not going to hire an ugly person for Starfleet. My God.
Chekhov looks, Walter Koenig in this looks like he's about 15 years old.
But also because of the wig, he kind of still looks like 40 always.
Yes.
It's unfortunate. This is a time when a lot of the styles are very aging. But so we,
yeah, Bones was actually 21.
DeForest Kelly was had turned 19 on the set.
That's right. That's what cocktail lunches every day will do. Yeah.
It's true. It's true.
And 5 packs a day.
And so we get down to Vulcan, which is a desert planet. The air is like a little thinner than the humans are used to, which will come into play. But then we get the whole entourage. We have T'Pau, who's a Vulcan leader, and she is, as Kirk says, the only person to turn down, what is it, like a chair on the Federation or something like that.
She said she wouldn't participate in No Nut November. It's unheard of.
She's very powerful. She's this like very, I love her costuming too, where it's half kind of like gauzy drapings, and then she gets up from her litter and she's wearing like sensible slacks. It's so good. Yeah. So she comes through. She's, you know, a leader of Vulcan. She's being carried in on a litter, as you do. And then we have T'Pring in this like, you know, shiny silver outfit. I love her hairdo and her makeup. And there's a
T'Pring
couple.
Is Spock's wife.
Spock's betrothed. Yes.
Yeah, Spock's
and,
wife.
And they were betrothed as children. And they've been apart for like many, many years. We see earlier, you know, Spock is looking at a photo of her as a child. So it's presumably like the last time they saw each other, they were kids.
You know, a thought just occurred to me, like, you know, we said at the top, a mock time, it means nothing, but it could have been, they could have named this episode something really dumb, like
Spock's
a lot
wife.
Of TV shows. Yes, it could have just been called Spock's wife.
You know,
it would be Spock's wife, question mark?
Why? Yeah.
I would take a mock time.
I mean, a mock time isn't like a mock.
Spock's wife.
A mock is, you know, things are a mock.
A mock means like
crazy.
Crazy.
It's the crazy time.
Crazy time.
I'm having the Vulcan crazy time. No, what if this was a 90s anime, what would the title be?
Oh, the 90s anime would be like, Spock's wife, question mark, Ponfar, the horny time.
Can Kirk help him?
Can Kirk help? What's his wife's name?
T'Pring
is like a babe.
She's so gorgeous. Also, the photo on...
Don't tell that to Nurse Chapel.
No, the photo on
Sorry,
the
Nurse Chapel, but.
Wikipedia for this episode is T'Pring and Spock, and they're touching fingers, which is a Vulcan kiss, and they're not looking at each other, and the look on Spock's face is like,
Yeah, they also like have no chemistry whatsoever. No, they're clearly not into each other.
This is such a like beard situation, but yeah.
Well, we find out why she's not into
We
him.
Find out that she's got her little boy toy on the side. She's got Staan over here, and he's a pure-blooded Vulcan, unlike
he's
Spock.
He's also really tall.
He's very tall, and he's got a wide face. And
he's also not in Starfleet, which is a big plus.
That's a big thing, yeah. Because as T'Pring states at the end of the episode, like, oh, we've heard about you, Spock. We
Mr.
know
legend over here.
And
well,
and,
but part of it is like she is T'Pring wants to be a strong, independent woman. Yep. Where she's like, you're Spock, like with a capital S. If I marry you, I'm going to be Spock's wife. I don't want to be Spock's wife.
I don't want to be Spock's wife.
I want
the title
my
of this
husband
episode.
To be T'Pring's husband.
No, and exactly. We get at the end of the episode because as the ceremony is about to start, T'Pring says, no, actually, I'm divorcing you and you got to fight to the death with the person of my choosing.
Yeah. It's not divorce. They get into it like, you know, like the only way I could break up with you is if, like, you know, I had you kill your captain, then you know, obviously you'd get jailed and we couldn't get married. And she goes into this whole thing of like,
she has a very logical. Chain of reasoning.
I'll be
there.
Honest, it's convoluted to me. I like saw that scene twice, and I'm still kind of wondering, like, why didn't she just pick like her boy toy as the champion?
Because he might die.
But she wants to fuck him. They kind of like set up where it's almost like, no, he's gonna win.
Well, we don't know because Spock is, you know, he's famous. He's reckless. That's one of my other favorite things about like Spock as a character, whereas like to humans, he's like fuddy-duddy, wet blanket, old Vulcan, blah, blah, blah. And to the Vulcans, they're just like, have you fucking heard about this guy?
He
oh
is
my
a
God.
Mock all the time.
Yeah. It is insane.
There's like probably Vulcans with like posters of Spock in their bedroom.
Yeah, who are like, and their mothers are like, do not become like Spock when you grow up. It is reckless. And
he is a bad boy.
The children are like, I understand you, mother. That would be very illogical. But then they put up their Spock posters and they're like, he's so cool.
Spock in like a leather jacket, like smoking a cigarette.
I imagine it's like, are you guys aware of that, that Burt Reynolds Playgirl spread that he did?
Oh, yeah. There's a Spock version
that
of that.
Only Spock.
With exactly as much body hair. Ideal.
I just want to, for the record, I am not familiar with the Burt Reynolds play.
We'll find you a copy of that. Don't worry.
Okay. It's something to see.
It is something to see. And that is, once again, the kind of sexuality that could be shown and talked about at this time is very different than it would become. But I feel like it is still like engaging and like the stakes are there.
Okay.
And
let's backtrack a moment. Let's talk about the other love triangle, Spock and Nurse Chapel, or should I say Christine.
That's okay. It's a lot of we're still on the ship. This is before we touch down to Vulcan, and Spock is having an angry, horny nap in his room. And then
clutching a pillow.
And then
he does clutching that pillow.
And then Chapel comes in and just kind of looks at him for a little bit like a creep. And then when she's walking away, he's like, I know you're here and I'm awake. And
I had a dream about you.
I had
you,
a
actually.
Dream about you.
Miss Chapel.
Yes, Mr. Spock.
I had a most startling dream. You were trying to tell me something, but I couldn't hear you. It would be illogical for us to protest against our natures, don't you think?
I don't understand.
Face is wet.
I came to tell you that we are bound for Vulcan. We'll be there in just a few days.
Vulcan. Miss Chapel.
My name is Christine.
Yes, I know, Christine. Would you make me some of that lo mix soup?
Oh, I'd be very glad to do that, Mr. Spock.
This is the one scene where I'm like, I don't need this. Okay, I get he's horny and crazy.
And it doesn't really amount to. I mean, like Nurse Chapel's like there at the end, like, oh, Mr. Spock.
Yeah, she just kind of smiles at him.
But I was having a thought, and this gets back to what I was alluding to earlier at the top of the episode with old Gene Roddenberry.
Yes, Mr. Roddenberry, maybe.
I don't know if Gene Roddenberry married Majel Barrett after this point or before or what.
It was before, right?
I couldn't help but think. And it's well known that Gene Roddenberry was like a huge horn dog.
Well, yes.
So I couldn't help but wonder if this scene was put into the episode just simply so Gene can like live his like cuck fantasy or something.
He wants to be cucked by Spock so bad. Honestly,
because you're right.
I think
it's
he
like,
wants.
It doesn't really need to be in this. In
I
the episode.
Think he wants Spock to cuck Chapel. Like, importantly, she doesn't get what she wants. She does not get. She's not the one.
Oh,
rolling...
you think Chapel is the cuckie?
Well, she's not the one rolling around on the sands of Vulcan with Spock. Now is she?
Well, that, okay, in the episode, yeah, I was viewing it more like Gene
on a
was
meta
like, oh,
level.
Yeah.
Okay,
on a meta level, yeah, Gene was like, oh yeah, that's hot.
He's like, yeah, tell her how you want her to make you some soup, Spock. Oh yeah. Well, maybe.
Well, yeah, that's the conspiracy theory for this episode.
Maybe so. I mean, that I do love that just aspect of Star Trek where it's
like both of them, like both Gene and what's her name?
Majel.
Weren't they both like kind of horn dogs? Like,
well, yeah, you can't be on Star Trek and not be a horn dog.
Because didn't they like have like a super open relationship?
Probably.
And... Oh, that's right. Yeah. Well, and also her character, Deanna Troi's mother in Next Gen, is also horny.
And Gene wasn't really super involved by that point. So I'm guessing that's like her personality too. Why they stayed together.
Love that. The studios originally were like, no, we're not going to use this gal. We don't like her. And she was like, well, I'm going to put a wig on and I'm going to be in the show. And guess what? I'm going to be the voice of every computer, every ship, and I'm going to come back as Troy's horny mom. Fuck you. I love her. I do. So we're on Vulcan.
Back to Vulcan.
We're having... the ceremony. T'Pring says, "Nuh-uh, I do not choose you." But we're still, as we said, T'Pring wants to kind of strike out on her own to be her own woman. But there is still a kind of patriarchal like marriage structure in place, so she can't just be like, "I'm divorcing you." It has to be you. You know. Battle for me and my hand, and if you
don't, they
survive,
say like the winner of this fight, I will become that person's property.
Basically, yeah, which is problematic. But
how so?
But so T'Pring, we think we keep on getting the camera on Stan, her boy toy. But instead of choosing him to fight Spock, she chooses none other than James Tiberius Kirk. What? And Spock is at this point not in his right mind. He's like kind of curled up in the corner, like shaking.
Yeah. This is a little like this is like the only. Maybe the most like sweaty part of the episode,
it's literally
just
sweaty.
Just the image of him like curling his fingers.
He's like putting his hands together, and they're like, "Don't try to talk to him. He cannot hear you."
I need to nut or kill someone right now.
I gotta bust in some way.
His eyes are like rolling into the back of his head.
It's incredible.
Oh, that reminds me. There's a brief. Speaking of like either nutting or violence, there's a moment earlier in the episode when Spock breaks a computer monitor.
Oh, yeah, he smashes it.
But it is clearly not a computer monitor. It is a box like painted to look like a computer.
Yeah, it's like a hollow, thin plastic box so that he can just like crush it with his bare hands.
It's like like those moments that you get every once in a while where you see him like up against a wall and the whole thing moves like it's clearly cardboard. Geez.
I was
like,
I love
they
that.
Couldn't just put in like a sound effect of like throwing a TV. You know,
you're
what I mean?
Watching like, this. You're watching this on a 13-inch screen in like
blurry.
Well,
no, I'm talking
blurry.
About the sound effect. It oh. literally makes a crunchy box sound effect.
They should have done like a plastic chip bag sound. Where it's like, oh my God, Spock, you be- control yourself. Yes. Yeah, so to oh God, Spock, leave the ship alone. So yes, T'Pring demands the Caliphi, a physical challenge between Spock and the champion. And so
yeah,
Kirk
is just like, oh, I'll just knock him out, whatever. Like I won't hurt him.
But
then,
Spock is in he's in his horny madness. He will do this to the death. So Kirk is like, what? Huh?
Yeah,
huh?
And they get their those big foam weapons that are like totally hey, like America. Man.
They get so their clear very foam. Dangerous Lurpa. I love the music during this whole time, and I love, as we said, the Vulcan set of all the sparkly sand and like
oh, yeah.
chimes.
The chimes. They're always shaking bells around for this.
To speak to the music briefly, like I forgot that this was that episode. But they kind of sprinkle that theme throughout the episode early mm-hmm. on, and you hear it like in a different tempo or something. I'm yeah. like, oh, it's that episode. Awesome.
Oh, it's gonna go down. So yeah, they have their little scarves tied around their waists for
put
for
on
the
your
fight.
Ceremonial scarf, please.
And Spock is, as we said, he's fighting to the death. Kirk is like, I don't want to hurt him or kill
him. Established, so you're the bigger TOS fans. Has it been established at this point that Vulcans have superior strength?
Yeah, it's you
they
know
would have done the Vulcan. Claw thing by
oh
now.
The nerve pinch that's happened yeah. already.
Okay.
Well, first of all, he did smash that computer earlier in the episode, that super real
computer
monitor. But no, I
human couldn't have done that.
I believe at this point it's been established that, like, you know, small things here and there that Vulcans have a superior strength, and obviously, like we said, Spock is playing to win here, so he slices open Kirk's top. Exposing some nipples.
And I love Kirk's response here. It's almost like, you dick.
My nips.
Oh, no, like, you dick. You know, you slashed my shirt. That's coming out of your pay,
that's
mister.
My tits. Spock, come
now
on.
Now everyone will see my glorious
Now
pecs.
Everyone can see my big, round, luscious pecs. so we're.
I can imagine him strutting, you know, through the hallways with his shirt exposed.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Hello.
With the one little line of red on his chest. But so we're fighting. We're doing this and that. Kirk is getting, like, noticeably.
Well, there's a cool detail here where they, like, they have like rounds, like a boxing match.
Yeah.
But every time they do a new round, they switch weapons, which I like.
Yeah, we go from the Lurpo, which is like a weighted thing on one side and a blade on the other, to like
to just a strap.
It's like a strap with some balls on it.
And as someone who's been watching a lot of old WWF recently, my first thought was, oh my God, it's a leather strap, man.
He got him with the on wound.
On wound.
I'm just looking
damn
at
you,
the words here.
Oh my God, he cut Kirk wide in half.
No,
we needed like a folding chair.
We needed McCoy with a microphone doing all of this. But yeah,
McCoy. Oh my!
Oh
God.
My God!
Somebody yes. stop the merch.
McCoy could have been JR.
That
oh
would have been
God.
Absolutely perfect. But yes, we're
as God is my witness. Captain Kirk is cut in half.
My God, T'Pau, please put a stop to this.
Stop the damn match.
So McCoy does intervene at a certain point because, as he said, he says, like, you know, this air is not what humans are used to. Kirk is obviously
like, I guess that's why they say hot as Vulcan
is,
here.
Hot as Vulcan. I loved that bit. But so he's convincing T'Pau of like, oh, I'm going to give him this injection of normal stuff that'll even the playing field. And T'Pau's like, whatever. Whatever. I loved her line when McCoy starts it. talking where he's like, the air is this. And she says, the air is the air.
It's also just like wrestling, right? Like, let me stop this match and just inject something. Don't ask too much.
Don't ask too much. This will be a super normal, compound. Sure, yeah.
I'm not injecting him with steroids and liquid cocaine.
I'm definitely not giving him the fall asleep potion that'll make Spock so sad he'll never be horny again.
Yeah, McCoy's basically coming in like, oh my God, it's now a new disqualification match. Count, falls count anywhere.
Oh my God. But in this whole, you know, we're doing the balls on a string on a fight round, and it seems as if Spock has strangled Kirk to death.
He's holding him over the coals.
Yeah.
Which I was at a cool moment. I'll say, like, the fight choreography in Star Trek, especially TOS, is usually, like, laughably bad.
It's very silly.
And this one, the weapons are laughably bad, but I do think the choreography is, like, okay.
I think
it's improved here.
Yeah, and I think they're putting a lot... They're physically doing a lot more stuff instead of the, like, full-on, like, you know... Kirk's fist is next to a punching fist.
The signature move of the double-handed fist slowly coming down on somebody's shoulder.
But we even get
in round one, one of the weapons like cuts something in half, like the giant
the gong.
So
the stakes are high. It seems like Nimoy and Shatner are like really throwing each other around. They're rolling all over the sand in some images that would become on my time on Tumblr very important.
This is for stealing my camera time in episode 7, you son of a bitch.
But when it seems that Kirk is dead, McCoy is like, oh, he's gone. Yep, he's totally, definitely dead. And he says to Spock, like, well, you're in charge now. And Spock at that moment has been cured of his horny insanity. And he says, and he's like, I set you free to Prings. I don't want to marry you. You clearly don't want to marry me. I just killed my best friend and captain and maybe more. I got to go turn myself into jail because I can't live with this at all. And then that's when we get,
she's just like, I grieve with you.
Oh yeah. Oh, T'Pau.
He was a very attractive human.
Yeah, I get it.
I saw the pecs.
I saw those pecs. I would. Yes. I would. This is when we get to Pring's explanation of she didn't want to be with Spock. So if he was
real Jerry Springer energy,
it was. I needed McCoy to be doing a wrestling or a Springer or something. But to bring, yeah,
Spock, you are not the father.
You are not the husband. To bring's explanation is that if Spock was the victor and he killed his captain, like, she doesn't give a fuck, and he'd probably release her because he clearly doesn't. You know, they don't want this. But if Kirk had won, Spock would be dead. She'd be with Stan. And even if Spock had won and not released her, she says outright, like, I would still have Stan. So
that is a perfectly logical meddling.
And she
like, isn't she like, I know if I you won and I had you, like, you would just go off into Starship and then I could just cheat on you
doing
with
your shit
toy.
And I would be doing my shit. So it's a win-win-win for T'Pring. And Spock is like, that's flawless logic. And T'Pring's like, oh my God, thank you.
Wait a minute, Spock.
Oh, that's so sweet. No, that their relationship is so like gay guy and beard. It's crazy. arranged marriage ass shit. But we're back on. Oh, before we get back to the ship, we get the Vulcan salute again between T'Pau and Spock.
It. That's not again, right? Isn't that the first time we see it?
I think they do the signal to each other when they first arrive. But this is when they do the signal and they say, live long and prosper.
Right, that's right.
Spock says it to T'Pau. She says it back and he says, I will not because I have killed my captain.
And I hate you, T'Pau.
And yeah, hey, guess what? I'm pissed.
I'm still a little horny, so that means I hate you.
It's interesting that the first time we get a live long and prosper in Star Trek, it's rejected by Spock. He's like, I will not.
Because I have killed my captain.
He loves Kirk.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but whether or not you want to read it as romantic or not, the love between Kirk and Spock is one of the major cornerstones of Star Trek as a whole.
And we're about to see that in a couple minutes.
Because we get back on this ship.
One of the best moments of Star Trek ever.
Of all time.
Agreed.
And
yeah, agreed.
Spock is still convinced that he is a murderer. He needs to go resign and go to jail. So he's back on the ship, and McCoy's like, well, not so fast. And Spock's like, no, I need to do this. I need to do that. McCoy's like, hey, hang on, I gotta. And then,
will you let me finish, Doctor?
And Spock keeps talking, but who's that behind him?
And Kirk is just walking around.
He says like, you know, Spock says something of like, and let Scotty know that blah blah blah. And then Kirk's line is like, don't you think you better check that with me first?
Doctor, I shall be resigning my commission immediately, of course.
Spock.
So I would appreciate your making the final arrangements.
Spock, I...
Doctor, please, let me finish. There can be no excuse for the crime of which I'm guilty. I intend to offer no defense. Furthermore, I shall order Mr. Scott to take immediate command of this vessel.
Don't you think you better check with me first?
Captain! Jim! I'm pleased to see you, Captain. You seem uninjured.
Jim! We get the musical sting, and then Spock spins around
Buddy!
With a big smile and says, Jim! And then quickly brings it back because,
and
oh,
then
oh
all
I
of
see
us
your
are
life.
Crying, and we're passing around the tissue box.
And we see like McCoy in the background. He's grinning too. They're all like, we saw you smile.
We
you
saw
fucking,
you have emotion.
We saw you have emotions.
We were screaming like, kiss him! Kiss him!
And and then we get the explainer that, like, actually it was a
yeah, he's like, oh, well, it's very logical for me to
be
relieved.
I was relieved to see the captain alive because he's a good officer, and that's it.
It would be a tragedy for the Starfleet to lose such a
we saw you. Okay. We saw you smiling.
Where's the courtesy pillow? Where's the courtesy pillow?
We saw you. We get the explainer of like, oh, he wasn't really dead. You know, McCoy made it look that way. And you know, the whole thing is okay. And there's also the bit where it's like, oh, and T'Pau okayed this whole thing afterwards, so no one's gonna get in trouble with Starfleet. And,
although I think in 7 years from now.
We'll
when
see.
They fight to the death again, they're going to have to come up with a new trick.
Maybe. Or, I don't know.
I also like Kirk's line here, his last line, like, all right, Spock, let's go mine the store.
I love when he says
mine
that.
The store.
It's so cute.
Well, the last line of the episode is Jim. Or not. It's
in a pig's eye.
McCoy just being like, yeah, logical. In a pig's eye.
My
which
ass.
Doesn't make any sense.
He's Southern.
Like, I think I get the point, but like, I was like, what?
Because because things are silly in a pig's eye or something. I don't know.
There's just one thing, Mr. Spock. You can't tell me that when you first saw Jim alive, that you weren't on the verge of giving us an emotional scene that would have brought the house down.
Merely my quite logical relief that Starfleet had not lost the highly proficient captain.
Yes, Mr. Spock, I understand.
Thank you, Captain.
Of course, Mr. Spock. Your reaction was quite logical.
Thank you, Doctor.
In a pig's eye.
Come on, Spock. Let's go mine the store.
Anyway, this is a fantastic episode. There is, you know, gay fan fiction older than many people's mothers because of this episode. It also in its legacy, and I'm sorry to bring this up. But
what are you gonna say?
This is in the legacy section.
Am I gonna need a courtesy pillow for this story?
No, I hope not. In the legacy, of course, the first usage of the Vulcan salute. There's also the chart-topping British pop band T'Pau took their name from the Vulcan matriarch who presides over events on this planet.
Wow.
And then the point right below that is the Omegaverse genre of speculative erotic fiction is noted as having been influenced by this episode. Do either of you know what the Omegaverse is? I'm sorry.
I've heard the term the Omegaverse, and I think I've even like seen like a YouTube video that was like explaining the Omegaverse,
Is this like what the Marvel movies are all about?
No. There's a lot of fan fiction.
What is the Omegaverse?
It's a kind of like fan fiction porn setup where there's alphas and omegas, and omegas, it's a whole like, oh, so-and-so is going into heat and they need to you know, it's Ponfar, it's, you know, heat, it's horny insanity.
Is it like fanfic of multiple universes, like Spock interacting with Goku
It's not a specific universe, it's a genre of, but it's like, what if I'm going to write my fan fiction where Captain America is an omega and he's going into heat, he needs to get fucked by, you know, Thor and Iron Man.
So the idea of alphas. Like, the idea of like this character is going through like a Ponfar-esque
basically
situation.
And there's other parts of the
it's
the genre.
The omega verse implying there's like one cinematic universe or extended universe.
It's all speculative.
It's just a genre.
It's a genre. It's
and
it's
the genre is Ponfar.
It's a type of porn. Yes.
Like what if X had to go through a Ponfar?
Yes. And again, horny insanity is a huge aspect of that. So that
picture,
is
if you will.
That would be the anime subtitle of this, of like horny insanity ?
... Spock.
...
Yeah, so this episode is beloved by a lot of people for a lot of reasons. It's a really good episode for the characters, for just the setting.
I would have loved to have been in the writer's room when they were pitching this episode.
Oh, I want to know too of like them figuring out of like, how explicitly can we say this? Oh, not at all. Okay, biology. Okay, yes. Vulcan biology. Because this is at a time where even the kind of like Star Trek joke of like, damn it, Jim, I'm this, not this. It's like, you can't say damn it on TV at this point. What are you talking about?
I was thinking that too. Yeah, I was expecting a damn it, but you'd have to wait for the movies before you got
you
that
can't,
kind
you
of
can't
salty
use naughty words.
Oh my God.
You can't use naughty words like that in 1967 on television. but
you have to say pig's eye.
No, you gotta say something stupid.
It doesn't make any sense. What did you think of this, Dave, as the less familiar TOS person?
I loved it. Like, I there's a reason. This is one of those episodes where, you know, the is, you know, permeated culture. Everyone, that's kind of a thing that everyone's kind of seen or heard of. I like I said earlier, I think this episode moves.
Yeah.
Possibly even more so than the Khan episode. Like, I was in, like, this entire episode. Yeah. Actually, you should note, I think this is, like, only 50 minutes, which is about 5 minutes shorter than the typical TOS length. But it moves.
They
should have
used that
purpose.
5 extra minutes to go into more detail on Ponfar.
It's I think, like, you really get one of the big things about TOS that, you know, everyone talks about is the chemistry between the characters, especially the core three of Spock, Kirk, and Bones, and you really get that here.
And again, like I mentioned earlier, like, at least the two seasons I saw, like, you don't get a ton of episodes like this that delve deeper into like personal matters of a character. It's more just like, we got to talk about a god creature or something.
But but it does still, like, something we kind of haven't gotten into, like, there's some, like, horniness aside, there's some interesting, like, thematic sci-fi elements here of, like, what is a species that's, like, all logical do when it has this moment of complete illogicalness? And the way that they, like, ritualize it, they talk about how that Ponfar, like, ceremony they do is like, this is how it's existed since prehistory, and like, you are about to see something that, like, and the way
that
they're
that
like
off-worlders have never seen,
like, Vulcans are so, like, internally ashamed about it, but also like, they have to ritualize it to deal with it in a way. Almost,
I love the kind of the whole
here.
Vulcan lore, and that's something that a lot of the, like, novelizations get into in more detail.
Novelizations.
I'm not talking about fan fiction, but while we're on the subject, in an official Star Trek a novelization, I want to say it's from one of the movies, but that might not be correct. There is a phrase used, a Vulcan phrase that Spock uses for Kirk, that there's like an asterisk at the bottom of the page that defines it as friend, brother, or lover. And it's like, you came up with the Vulcan thing, the Vulcan language. You came up with this word that Spock would use to describe Kirk, and you said it's friend, friend or lover. So I got to find the
And then, so speak to like the themes, like we mentioned like earlier, like, you know, like Ponfar seems to be like he has to release either in a violent way or a sexual way. It should be noted. And I, again, I'm wondering if this is if you can see this in previous episodes. But in Spock's quarters, his bedroom is like I was confused for a moment. Like when we see Spock's quarters, I'm like, is this Worf's quarters? Because there's
it's all like red and there's weapons.
Yeah. I was like, what is this?
Okay, so.
But it kind of shows that dichotomy of like, you know, getting into that violent, the release of violence or sex, that type of thing.
Well,
I'm like,
and
making a statement there.
To that point, though, but Vulcan is this red planet. And so that perhaps this color red to Spock is like a calming thing, like the color of nature. It's But anyway, I found the specific reference to what I was talking about. It's in the TOS novelization of the motion picture. And Spock...
Which I gifted you, Mike. Have you read that yet?
I haven't, but I have it.
Do your book report. Yeah. Spock thought of James T. Kirk
yeah.
as his...
That wasn't just a gift. That was an assignment.
But it's used, Spock thought of James T. Kirk as his T'Hyla and mentally said goodbye to him as he prepared to receive his symbol of total logic by Vulk, blah, 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 blah. In the motion picture where Spock is like trying to get rid of all his logic because of the shameful feeling he feels about Kirk. Anyway, and this is a word that means friend, brother, and lover. Just
right,
saying.
Mike, I know you haven't read it yet, and it was a gift, but I might need to take that book and read it from you. That sounds interesting.
You're like brother lover. Oh, I wanted to.
I'll read it. I'll read it by the time. I'll read it shortly.
Anyway, my gay agenda aside, I wanted to also point out one of my favorite bits at the end of the
episode. It's a shame that Star Trek back then went woke.
So woke. I hate it. The great line when Spock is leaving Vulcan and he says it's after his kind of goodbye with T'Pring, and he turns to Staan and says, "She is yours. After a time, you may find that having is not so pleasing a thing after all as wanting." And it's like, ooh.
Oh.
And also, it's true. So, yeah, I love
this.
Why
are you looking at me when you say that, Jackie?
I did not. I love this episode. It's great for gay reasons and great for other reasons, too.
They're great for gay reasons and lore reasons.
And lore reasons. Yeah. Is hot.
My two favorite things.
It's hot as Vulcan up in here.
There are two lines in this episode I want to point out. One that I really enjoyed. It's McCoy basically throwing logic back into Spock's face. When
he loves
trying
to do that.
Get the information out of him. He's like, "Come on, Spock. Yield to the logic of the situation." And Spock is forced to like, oh, damn it. He
McCoy,
got me with logic.
He hates when McCoy pulls that card.
McCoy,
like,
I feel like McCoy is like giddy this whole episode because
yes.
he's just like, I can't wait to shove this
he's
in
like,
Spock's
Spock
face.
He's like, Spock is having horny
is
insanity? Oh my God.
He is never going to live this down.
Hey, Spock, remember when you threw that soup because you were so crazy horny?
Yeah, I guess I'm too emotional, huh?
Oh, me and my human emotions.
There's that great moment, and also the best line in the episode when it was when we kind of talked about it earlier when they're trying to skate around saying like puberty when there's like biology, and basically Spock or Kirk goes, "Oh well, you know, everyone knows about the birds and the bees," and Spock's reply, the best line in the episode:
"The birds and the bees are not Vulcans, Captain."
He's right.
There's so many great moments about this episode, and again, like I said, it just moves. Like I was in the whole time. Like I was not checking
the clock.
It's funny, emotional.
It looks really good too. I mean, I guess yeah. Part of this is the remastering, but they did a good job. Then I mean, it looks
yeah.
It doesn't look like great. Star Wars special edition vibes where it's like stuff is you know it looked. Up
I would
its
say
time.
It's like tastefully done.
Yes, and it also you know the always. Talking about it, but this stuff was shot on film, so it's like it looks
yeah.
good. Like it
looks gorgeous.
Yeah, it looks great in high def. It looks very yeah, you can see like some of the eyeliner, but that looks awesome. I think it adds to the
eyeliner
like,
always
watching
looks good.
A play kind of charm that it has.
You could see it's so sharp, you could see the little netting underneath Chekhov's wig.
Yeah, and you get Chekhov and
we get a little Chekhov and Sulu back
oh,
and forth.
Oh yeah, a
yeah.
little banter. I guess. Yeah, you, I'm getting space sick. We're going back and forth all day, Vulcan. All day, Vulcan.
Sulu's like, I think you better plot back to Vulcan.
Which is like something you don't really get a whole lot in TOS. Like the minor characters are pretty minor. Like they don't have many lines. So it's nice when they do have a little bit. It fills out the crew more.
Yeah.
Big fan. But not too much. They're stealing my screen time.
Get that young, pretty guy out of here. It's still my show.
Well, any other closing thoughts on A Mock Time, or shall Michael reveal his pick for the next episode?
Let me get that. I know the episode I want to pick, but let me find the name of it.
It's Amok Time 2, okay. Electric Boogaloo.
Confirm that this is season.
This is. And while Mike's looking into that, audience, if you want to check out the Omega Verse, is that what it was called?
I'm sorry. I brought it up. I shouldn't have.
Check out your local internet for the Omega Verse.
No, turn your safe search on. You don't need to look this up. It's. But I will say again that the as gay fan fiction goes, Kirk and Spock are considered in many ways fathers of you know, such a thing.
Nice. All right. Pioneers.
Yeah, I have my episode picked, ready to go. We will be watching season 3, episode 3, The Paradise Syndrome.
Oh.
I'm just going to read the quick little blurb. Captain Kirk is distracted by his passion for beautiful women, leaving Spock to defend a planet against a disastrous asteroid collision.
Written, so this is kind of like the mirror image of A Mock Time.
This is written by a woman too, Margaret Armin. So I'm sure it's going to be really actually progressive.
Yep.
So we're swapping out horny Spock with horny Kirk. I love it.
Always. And most importantly, what can everyone here do the Vulcan hand salute? I can't. Only on one hand.
Only on one hand.
Yeah. For some reason, the other hand just can't do it.
Wow.
Well, I was going to ask about that, because isn't there a little bit of there's a little bit of, like, it's not controversy, but, like, there's a way to do it. Like, there's the way with your thumb out, and there's a way with your thumb, like, tucked in.
Oh, I can't do it tucked in.
I assume.
But that is a thing, right?
Can't do it with detected.
The fingers can only move the way they want to move.
I'm doing it tucked in, tucked out, both hands.
But you know who famously thing, couldn't do the hand signal was Zachary Quinto as Spock in the Abrams movies.
Really?
Oh, yeah. did that originate with Quinto?
Did they have to CG?
No, the one time when we see him do the gesture at the very end of the movie to old Spock, Leonard Nimoy, it's someone else's hand.
Really?
Yeah.
Could his thumb not do that?
I think he just, because some people, like, you can't get the fingers to move that way. I think Quinto just couldn't do it.
Glued his fingers together for a scene or something.
They just did it for one. Well, it must
feel. Or CG it like Cavill's mustache.
You must feel self-conscious not being able to do that in front of Nimoy as old Spock. Like, come on.
Can you do it, Dave?
Yeah, I could do it with the thumb out or the thumb in. Yeah,
okay, I can do thumb in. Okay. Not very well.
But I remember we're getting into the weeds now. Like people have already turned
we'll get
off the
out
episode.
Of here.
Do you guys remember on TV years ago? This was when Leonard Nimoy was still alive. He was doing an ad for, like, it was one of those things like, take such and such, side effects may include, uh-huh, blah blah blah. But it showed him like struggling to do the Vulcan hand symbol.
Hey, we're getting older, man.
The suggestion is he takes the medicine and suddenly he does it at, like, a convention and everyone's like, yes!
It makes me sad. It makes me sad. Ugh, we get older. Our hands don't work as well. Can't do the Vulcan salute without whatever medication.
Yeah, one day you'll need medication to do the Vulcan hand salute.
That's, oh, downer end.
Sorry.
It's okay. Rest in peace, King. He did live long and prosper,
for sure.
So.
Well, that'll do it. When we come back, the Trek cast will be getting horny with Captain Kirk with the Paradise Syndrome. Live long and prosper. Or not.
Or don't.
I will do neither.
No, thank you.
Captain's Log. Final thoughts. We've learned a lot in this week's episode. For example, Vulcan biology is not like the birds and the bees. When a Vulcan is experiencing panfar, do not deliver them soup as a friendly gesture. And finally,
While Ponfar may only come around every 7 years, it's the friends that we make along the way that last a lifetime. Until next time, take care of yourself and live long and prosper.